This briefing was it was sophomoric and utterly unconvincing.
The basic theme of it was the administration essentially saying, trust us.
I had calls from numerous senators and numerous congressmen and women saying it was the greatest presentation they've ever had. People have called and they've said it was the best presentation they've ever seen.
Yes, numerous people, real people, told me that. Like who? Senator Guy True Person and Congresswoman Not a Lie Actual Lady.
Has everyone already forgotten what happens when we don't ask for concrete evidence justifying a military attack against a Middle Eastern country whose name begins with Ira?
Obviously, the war in Iraq was a big, fat mistake.
I say, before we give the president the authority to attack another Middle Eastern country, we must demand better lies. We deserve better lies. This is America, home of the Whopper. Our taxes, your taxes, my taxes, our taxes pay for all these lives. Put some effort into it. Dazzle and deceive us. Sell it with some sizzle. Scare the out of us. But just try.
All this man wants, which I guess he didn't get for Christmas, is credit.
They're doing a book. I tweet it, and all of a sudden, they become a bestseller. And then they don't talk to me anymore. They give me no credit. And any success that we hopefully have, and we've had a lot, we're given no credit.
Legislative approvals, for which I'm given no credit.
We've already signed 88 pieces of legislation. We get no credit.
We've established a very good relationship. We're given no credit for it.
Bernie was doing well, and I got no credit for it.
We get no credit.
We got no credit for it.
We get no credit for that.
I got no credit for this.
I've got no credit for it.
I get no credit for that.
I don't get any credit for this.
We got no credit.
We get no credit.
And we're getting unbelievable credit for what we've done, other than the mainstream media, which just gives us no credit whatsoever.
Somebody, please get this guy a Discover card before he blows up the world. Because this is no laughing matter. This is when the fact that Donald Trump has his finger on the nuclear button becomes a real concern. Up until now, the only wars he was ever involved in were with Bette Midler and Cher. This is real. And hopefully that was it for military retaliation. But the other thing we now have to worry about is an Iranian cyber attack. Authorities say Americans should be on heightened alert for a cyber attack. How? Should I unplug my computer? What does that mean? Do I hide under my desk? I need more information. And aren't we already under cyber attack from the president's Twitter account every day?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the honey drippers in the house tonight. And they just got back from Washington, D.C. I think they got something they want to say.
Can't do that, I said.
It's the president.
Yesterday, our current president tweeted about impeachment and said, "Hose Republicans." Voted 195-0 against it. Well, I mean, I guess we can't expect the real estate developer to be able to spell the word house.
This president is impeached for life, regardless of any gamesmanship on the part of Mitch McConnell.
Reports that the White House expects Republicans will defect in the trial of Donald Trump as still more evidence comes to light.
Mr. President, sir, what conversations have you had with Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman?
I don't know those gentlemen.
You're in pictures with them.
The House voted to send the two articles of impeachment against President Trump, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, to the Senate for a trial. Speaker Nancy Pelosi named seven House members as impeachment managers. Those are the folks who will act as prosecutors over in the Senate during the trial. They are Adam Schiff, chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Jerry Nadler, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Also, Zoe Lofgren of California, Hakeem Jeffries of New York, Val Demings of Florida, Jason Crow of Colorado, and Sylvia Garcia of Texas. And after Speaker Pelosi signed the articles of impeachment, the seven impeachment managers walked the articles from the House to the Senate to deliver them for the trial. Today's vote concludes the nearly four-week period during which Speaker Pelosi held back those two articles, a strategy that drew quite a bit of criticism. And it is incontrovertibly true that the case for impeaching the president was very strong when they voted to do so last month. But since then, since Speaker Pelosi's decision to hold them back, the case has only gotten stronger. Here's a sampling of what we have learned in the interim. We found out the military aid to Ukraine was withheld at the president's direction, that the freeze came the day of Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian president. We learned that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper, and National Security Advisor John Bolton staged an intervention in a meeting with Trump to get him to release the aid. And John Bolton, who referred to the president's Ukraine scheme infamously as a, quote, drug deal, announced that he would testify before the Senate if he was subpoenaed. And then just yesterday, a few hours before we came on air, the House released the first tranche of documents provided to them by indicted Rudy Giuliani associate Lev Parnas. And they are wildly incriminating. They include Rudy going back and forth with the discredited Ukrainian prosecutor with an axe to grind. There are texts hinting the possibility that Trump's flunkies were surveilling the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. A handwritten note from Lev Parnas reading, quote, "Get Zelensky to announce the Biden case will be investigated." There are hundreds of new pages of documents that show how far up in the Republican Party this scheme goes. They include a text message from Lev Parnas saying, quote, "I'm officially part of Team Trump tomorrow."
Lev, why do you want to testify to the impeachment investigation?
I want to get the truth out. Because I feel it's important for our country. I think it's important for me. I think it's important for the world to know exactly what transpired and what happened, because I think there's a lot of things that are being said that are not accurate, and I just want to make sure that they're accurate, because things happen that need to get out, and I think the world needs to know.
What do you think is the main inaccuracy or the main lie that's being told that you feel like you can correct?
That the president didn't know what was going on. President Trump knew exactly what was going on. He was aware of all of my movements. I wouldn't do anything without the consent of Rudy Giuliani or the president. I have no intent, I have no reason to speak to any of these officials. I mean, they have no reason to speak to me. Why would President Zelensky's inner circle or the minister Avakov or all these people or President Poroshenko meet with me? Who am I? Mm-hmm. They were told to meet with me, and that's the secret that they're trying to keep. I was on the ground doing their work.
In terms of the president and what he has said about you, he said about you and Mr. Fruman, Igor Fruman.
What conversations have you had with Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman?
I don't know those gentlemen.
You're saying that was not a true statement from the president.
He lied.
When you say that the president knew about your movements and knew what you were doing, are you saying specifically, and I want to sort of drill down on that, that the president was aware that you and Mr. Giuliani were working on this effort in Ukraine to basically try to hurt Joe Biden's political career. He basically knew about that.
Yeah, well, it was all about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and also Rudy had a personal thing with the Manafort stuff, the Black Ledger. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing that they were looking into. But it was never about corruption. It was strictly about the Burisma, which included Hunter Biden and Joe Biden.
The president of the United States, and using appropriated funds enacted in a bipartisan way by this Congress, funds that were meant to help the Ukraine fight the Russians. The president considered that his private ATM machine, I guess, and said he could say to the president, he could make, do me a favor. Do me a favor. Do you paint houses too? What is this? Do me a favor.
Tony told the old man to tell me, to tell you, It's what it is.
What it is?
It's what it is. Please, listen to me.
They wouldn't dare. They wouldn't dare. Jimmy, please, Frank, come on.
Don't say they wouldn't dare.
No, don't tell me that kind of, that's fairy tale.
Please, please. Don't say they wouldn't dare.
Please, something funny happens to me. They're dumb. You understand that? And they know it because I got files. I got proof. I got records. I got tapes. Anytime I want, they'll be gone. These guinea mother spend the rest of their lives in jail. And they know it. They know it.
What you're saying is what they're concerned about.
What I'm saying is I know things. I know
you
things.
Want to go?
They don't know I know. Please,
do you want to take that chance?
What chance am I? Why should I be taking a chance?
They're saying this is it.
They're saying this is it, and then it's it?
Yeah.
Bull Frank,
Jimmy,
come on.
I'm trying to tell you something.
I know you are. You're telling me they're threatening me, and I got to do what they say, which is
but it's more
absolutely
than a threat. It's the bottom line.
Bottom line.
It's what it is.
Thanks for the song this week from the
Honey Drippers
and
Golden Earring.
And thanks also to
Rod Serling, Rudy Giuliani, Stephen Colbert, Seth Myers, Mike Pompeo, Chuck Todd, Margaret Brennan, Esper, Mike,
Lee, Chris
Murphy,
Rand,
Paul,
Jimmy
Kimmel,
Chris
Hayes,
Rachel
Maddow, Lev Parnas, Nancy
Pelosi,
and Frank Sheeran,
and Jimmy
Hoffa.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
The sleepy world of the New York Public Service Commission monthly meetings was once again disrupted by the demand for addressing the worldwide climate emergency. And once again, over the chance of protesters, the PSC stayed with fossil fuels, voting 4-1 to approve a massive rate hike by Con Ed, meant largely to buttress and expand methane infrastructure. Though the PSC is reacting somewhat to scientific realities, it's doing so at a glacial pace. Here's Commissioner Tracy Edwards, the lone dissenting voice in Thursday's vote.
I believe that we should be doing more faster to challenge ourselves to integrate all of the things that you discussed, the statewide policies, the generic policies, and integrating them into the rate cases. That's my concern. You specifically pointed out all of the benefits for the joint proposal. So my concern is that I think that we could have done more within the confines of the joint proposal to integrate more environmental policy and low-income initiatives. I want to go faster. And the repair and the maintenance of the existing infrastructure is important for protection, no doubt. But even within the order, there's a forum planned to address the natural gas transition, but it's not until 2021. I am concerned that we need to do as much as we can, as fast as we can, on renewable energy solutions, on decarbonization, on cybersecurity, and the increased storage.
I spoke with Lee Zichy of Sane Energy Project after the vote to get an idea of what this vote would mean, as Governor Cuomo shows no sign of halting the impending completion of the Cricket Valley Energy fracked gas power plant and other gas infrastructure projects.
So since Con Ed is a monopoly, if they want to raise our rates in New York City, they have to get approval from the Public Service Commission. So there was this long process of a confidential settlement negotiation where Con Edison, along with New York State and New York City, came up with this plan to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in frack gas pipelines and other gas infrastructure. And so the PSC had to vote on whether or not to approve that. Sane Energy Project was also a party in the rate case, though, and I can't talk about what happened in confidential settlement, but I can say what wasn't talked about, and that was the climate crisis. So, you know, we filed testimony saying that it's insane for us to be investing hundreds of millions of dollars in frack gas infrastructure in 2020. You know, for a long time, climate science has told us we need to get off gas, but now it's also city and state climate law. The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act says that we need to look at the full life cycle of methane and that we need to drastically reduce our emissions. Well, you can't continue to build pipelines and invest in liquefied natural gas and reduce emissions at the same time. You know, we know climate science says we can't do that. So we were arguing that these are going to be investments in stranded assets that us as ratepayers, the people that pay Con Ed bills, are going to get stuck with. And the Public Service Commission just completely ignored that. And they put Con Ed's profits first. They continued business as usual. And they just, you know, pretty much condemned New York City to climate disaster.
Listening to the different commissioners, they all seem to have like a different language. One of them especially was focused on a lot of this money going towards municipal taxes. Are these people approaching this with different degrees of myopia from your point of view?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was only one brave commissioner, Tracy Edwards, who actually listened to the people. You know, she was at the public hearing, and I could see, you know, when we were speaking that she was listening to us. And she brought up the concerns that the people raised, that this plan did not go far enough to protect low-income ratepayers, and it did not go far enough and fast enough developing renewable energy. And then you had someone like Diane Berman, who, you know, has been working with the industry for a very long time. Her main concern was that the rate of return, the amount of money that Con Ed is going to get in all their investments, wasn't high enough. I mean, that's insane. Con Ed is going to be making tremendous profits off of these frack gas pipelines, and the rest of us are going to be paying the price of it. You know, they make all the profits, we take all the risk, and that's what Diane Berman's concern was. And that was just just absolutely enraging. And then when people got up and started chanting and singing in opposition to this, you know, the people who are going to be most affected, Diane Berman got out of her seat and got the cops to come in and escort people out. So if that's what the Public Service Commission is, I don't think they're representing the public very well.
So the people that were there protesting today, including yourself, are voicing the concerns about a climate emergency, which I think is well established in terms of all the science that's out there now. Does this vote by the commission end this issue, or is this something where the governor could intervene?
It's interesting, right? So the Public Service Commission is kind of supposed to be a private and not private entity, but they're supposed to be outside of politics, sort of. But we know that Governor Cuomo has a lot of influence on them. So if he had not approved of this rate hike, it would not have gotten approved today. Also, you know, the city of New York signed off on this proposal. So, you know, you have Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, who both talk a big game on climate, supporting this plan that just supported frack gas infrastructure. So, you know, it will move forward. The rate hike will start very soon. We'll start feeling that on our bills. And Con Ed's going to start digging up pipeline, you know, digging up streets in Queens, in the Bronx, to start putting in pipelines. But I don't think this is the end of it. We're not going to just sit back and be like, okay, we're going to spend the next 3 years and hundreds of millions of dollars going in the wrong direction. There are other rate cases happening, and we will, you know, fight very hard for a better outcome in those. But I think communities also have to decide, you know, is the Queens community going to try to stand up and try to stop this pipeline, you know, through nonviolent direct action? There was also a lot of people who didn't approve of this, including New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer, New York City Public Advocate Jemani Williams. So I think we're going to continue to reach out to our elected officials. And, you know, as the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act is implemented, as the Climate Mobilization Act is implemented, you know, those could maybe halt some of these projects. But I think right now it's going to be up to communities to stop them in the meantime, as, you know, our government finally catches up with us.
For people who wanted to learn more and get involved with this, where would you suggest that they go?
Yeah, if you go to saneenergyproject.org, we actually have a whole page on utilities. We, you know, outline what Con Ed is trying to spend money in, what National Grid also wants to raise our rates for, and explain this whole ridiculous process of our corporate utilities and what they do.
Stay tuned for more developments in the ongoing struggle to address our environmental realities. For the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, I'm Dave Pablo.
On every Tuesday of the legislative session, hundreds of people descend on Albany to speak with lawmakers about causes that matter to them. On Tuesday, January 14, 2020, around 500 activists and lawmakers packed the Capitol calling for an end to lifetime prison sentences. As it stands now, two bills are being proposed. First is the Elder Parole Bill. This bill would allow anyone who has served 15 years in prison to come before a parole board when they turn 55. The second piece of legislation, called the Fair and Timely Parole Bill, would change the standard for parole and allow someone to be released if they show signs of rehabilitation. Hudson Mohawk Magazine was at the Million Dollar Staircase for the press conference. Here are a few of those voices, starting with Assemblywoman Carmen De La Rosa.
A few months ago, I joined my colleagues. Brad was there, Jamal was there, many of us were there, and we went over to Greenhaven. And when you look at the faces of the young men there, you cannot tell me that mass incarceration does not exist in New York State, as I heard a law enforcement official say. Yes, the numbers are down, that's true, due to the movement that the people have created. The numbers are down, but don't be fooled. At every single turn, they're trying to undo that progress. And when I look at the faces of those young men, I know that mass incarceration is real. And mass incarceration is real for the men and the women in communities like mine in Upper Manhattan, in Washington Heights, where the Rockefeller drug laws took generations of men, sons, daughters, fathers, brothers away from their family. You want to talk about family separation? The mass incarceration system is family separation, domestic family separation. And today, I am so proud to be able to co-sponsor a clean version of the Elder Parole Bill with Senator Hoylman. Because I believe I have a responsibility to stand up for the men and women that just like me grew up in communities where we were one step away from being in their shoes. One mistake away. Yeah. These people who are incarcerated don't pretend to be innocent. They have done their time. They have served their time that was handed down to them by this broken justice system. But they've done their times, and their families have done their times. And now it's time to give them the opportunity to fight, because we're a state that supposedly doesn't believe in the death penalty. Well, life without the possibility of parole is death. Life without the possibility of parole is death. And like Senator Rivera, I too believe in redemption. I too believe that each one of us deserves the dignity of transforming our lives. And I believe in a criminal justice system that allows for that transformation to happen for everyone. But nobody's lives are worth more than any other person's. My life is worth the same as your life. And we should have a system that takes into account that all of us are created equally, and that all of us have a right to return to our communities, to return to our families, and to live in dignity. We know the financial cost of mass incarceration. We know the corporate interests behind the mass incarceration system. We know what they are. We're not fooled. We're here with our eyes wide open looking at this system that oppresses us while enriches others. And we're here to say that we're not going back, and that we're moving forward, and that if you believe in common sense, you know that a person can change, and that a person can grow, and that that person is a human being and deserves to go back home.
That was Assemblywoman Carmen De La Rosa from the 72nd District. Next up, we hear from Serena Ligore. She is a resident of Long Island and was formerly incarcerated.
I stand before you as somebody who spent 6 months in solitary. We need to end solitary. I stand before you as somebody who is a Latina from Long Island. Where are my Long Islanders? When our Long Island lawmakers tell us Long Islanders don't care about people in prison, what do we say? We are here and we care. I stand here because Kim Brown, Kim who walked the yard with me, is still there. I went in at 19. She's still there. There is no reason for her to still be there today. She has changed. I am 20 years older, and I have transformed. Why are we keeping our women and men behind bars who have changed their lives? Linda Alfini. Linda, who will not see the parole board until she is 74. Linda makes the best pineapple upside down cakes. And she shares them. She shares them with everyone. Linda deserves a chance, a fighting chance, to come home and live her days out on in freedom. One of the things that we are ashamed of as Long Islanders is that our Long Island senators and assembly members who have not supported this bill say that Long Islanders don't care. Well, we do. And there are so many Long Islanders impacted. We stand in support with RAP and parole prep. And it's time to bring our women home. Val! Val stood in.
Thank you. You are listening to WCXC.
Tune in at 6 p.m.
and at 7 o'clock a.m.
For All Together Now.
For local news.
The weather and school closing.
For interview with neighbors and friends.
And you might even hear us.
The Campaign Medium group on
All Together Now.
Together Now.
At 7 o'clock a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m.
on 90.7 FM.
And WJXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amanda Lees of Freehold, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Moms for Housing in Oakland continue Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s fight. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Early Tuesday morning, a day before the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birth, a small army of police, sheriff's deputies, and a tactical SWAT team with a military robot laid siege to a house in Oakland, California.
Sheriff's office, if you refuse to leave, you will be arrested.
The threat they were confronting? Women and children nonviolently struggling for safe and affordable housing. They'd occupied the vacant home at 2928 Magnolia Street in West Oakland since November 18th. Moms for Housing describes itself as a collective of homeless and marginally housed mothers. They write, "Before we found each other, we felt alone in this struggle. But there are thousands of others like us here in Oakland and all across the Bay Area. We're coming together with the ultimate goal of reclaiming housing for the community from speculators and profiteers," unquote. Two mothers and two supporters were arrested during the pre-dawn raid, and the house owned by real estate speculation corporation Wedgwood Properties was quickly boarded up. Misty Cross, one of the mothers who was arrested, described on Democracy Now! What happened to her that morning.
Tuesday morning, it was like a movie scene. I had never seen anything like that live in my life. We never had gotten sleep that night because we knew that the sheriffs had 24 hours to serve the eviction. So while we stayed up and watched and waited for them to come in, they came, and it was something like they had knew that Dominique wasn't going to be at the home, so they waited till they got good on air and started to proceed to do the eviction. When they came to the door, ramming as hard as they were, and all the tactical gear as we watched from the window with AR-15s and these tanks and fire departments and ambulances out there, like it was a real terrorist threat. Like we were armed and we were dangerous. As I recall, we've always said that everything has been a nonviolent, civil disobedient act. We haven't disrespected anyone,
nor has we caused harm to anyone. So it was really shocking, and we were just puzzled, really, on how many armed forces were outside at that time. Once the sheriffs actually made their way through the door to get in a little bit, they sent in a robot that came in to roam around the home to see if there was any explosives or weapons of some form. I later found out that the tank that they had outside was a detection on it that can shoot people and detect weapons on sight just by like a metal detector. So it would shoot at anything that had some form of weapon on them. I just still am like traumatized from it. I have been a victim of violent crime myself before, shot multiple times with an AK-47. So to come out and see these men holding these guns for women and children was really, it was a scary moment, and it took me back.
Dominique Walker is another of the mothers with Moms for Housing. She wasn't arrested because at 5 a.m. that morning, she was in a TV studio appearing live on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. The police raid had not yet begun.
We've provided shelter for our children. This came out of absolute desperation, out of going through every program set up to help families in this predicament. Nothing helped. We were turned away. Programs were, the funding was cut from programs that were set up to help. This was an act of desperation, and it just gives light to the bigger issue.
As Dominique Walker spoke, I informed her about the text we just read. We just hear that there was a text that says the sheriff is knocking on the door and saying people have to clear out. Is that your understanding as we're speaking?
They gotta go.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I think we gotta go.
We gotta go.
Dominique Walker then pulled the earpiece out of her ear and raced out of the studio to be at the home with the other mothers. She raced out along with Carol Fife, who was also appearing as a guest on Democracy Now! That morning. She runs the Oakland office of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. She sat next to Dominique on the broadcast and said,
after the housing crisis and the foreclosure crisis of 2008, many homeowners lost their primary residences, their only residences. And so that allowed speculators and the banks that were bailed out by the government at that time to come in and scoop up homes at rock bottom prices. So that is still happening, and we're still experiencing the impacts of the foreclosure crisis with speculators owning 35% of the housing stock in America.
Had Martin Luther King Jr. not been assassinated in 1968 at the age of 39, he would have turned 91 on January 15th. His civil rights work in the South is well known. Speaking at the end of the Selma to Montgomery March for Voting Rights in 1965, King declared,
let us march on segregated housing,
yes, sir,
until every ghetto or social and economic depression,
yes, sir,
dissolve the Negroes and whites live side by side in decent, safe, and sanitary housing.
Yes,
in the following months, King set his sights on confronting racism in the North. He launched the Chicago Freedom Movement, attacking racism and housing segregation in the city and its suburbs. He was violently attacked there and told reporters, after being struck in the head with a rock, that he had never been as afraid in the South as he was in the North. He said, I've never seen, even in Mississippi and Alabama, mobs as hateful as I've seen here in Chicago, unquote. King's campaign in Chicago successfully challenged systemic racism, redlining, and other forms of housing discrimination there, helping to spur the passage of the Fair Housing Act in 1968. Violations of that law forced developer Fred Trump and his son Donald Trump to settle with the federal government in 1975 over allegations that the Trumps systematically discriminated against African-American apartment seekers in their Queens, New York housing complexes. But back in Oakland, California on Tuesday, as Democracy Now! Was wrapping up at 6 a.m. Pacific time, housing activist Carol Fife concluded,
we need to take speculation out of real estate, and we need to decommodify housing. And everyone that's showing up over the next 2 days up until Wednesday believes that, too.
Later that day, halfway across the country, six white candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination gathered in Iowa, one of the whitest states in the nation, for the final televised debate before the Iowa caucuses. Outside, Reverend William Barber was leading a moral march on the debate.
We will
change the nation.
Change the nation.
The last 40, 50 years, this nation has run from the issue of poverty. We talk about the middle class in debates. We talk about the wealthy. But we don't even hear a word about the poor.
Reverend Barber and his Poor People's Campaign are demanding that the candidates participate in a nationally televised debate on poverty, including the crisis of homelessness. The movement continues Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s final campaign, the Poor People's Movement, which he was launching when he was assassinated. More than 50 years later, from Chicago to Oakland to Des Moines, the fight continues. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Somebody left the weather warlock in a strange position. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio for open ears. I'm Tom Rowe, live in Acre. And we're about to get you some full-on weather here. The Catskill Makers are all in the room here. I was just going to find the weather update.
The snow is coming.
You can tell.
Hey, everybody. This is Joe from the better weather that you hear most of the time.
And you can tell this is currently... Whoops. What happened there? The quit run. Oh, the pond kicked out.
The bells and whistles are all going off. Did the nukes launch or something?
Yes, we've got... that meant the pond station just went out. It got too dark for the solar power to...
And that would be the cloud cover rolling in, accompanying the snow that's coming in this afternoon. Yeah. Sounds like around 3 p.m. everybody's going to be tied down with the snow coming. It's going to be coming in about over an inch an hour. So it's going to get a little rough for some people. We've got some fun things going on over there. What you got?
You got the whole... We're giving the tour of the studio. Behind you is all the Foley sounds there. If you'd like to make a noise, feel free.
The entire crew of the Maker Syndicate is pretty much here, but
Joe,
they are all shy and hiding.
Yeah, you went there, not talking there. And we have some extra...
Some extra Jessies, too. Jessas.
We're all experimenting with the audio today. But today is the Catskill Maker Syndicate field trip to the Wave Farm studio.
So this is the weather warlock that's, I'll turn off a mic so we can all hear it. You can see it takes the inputs of the change in precipitation outside, the change in sunlight, the change in wind, and the change in temperature, and turns that into sound. And you saw those sensors are out there. It's not spinning now, so it's calm. So we don't have too much changing conditions now, but it'll be much more interesting when the snow begins.
I like that feed idea, where if it was promoted regularly, you could get a good just couple second glance of what's going on in an instant by listening to what's going on with the tones, right?
Yes. And we also have out here, let's see.
Are those coming from live sensors or are those like internet feed?
That's all live from the sensors out there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Pole, yeah.
That's great.
And then out. The tiniest bit of movement. Oh, we got some movement. There's also this microphones. When we go on the tour, there's microphones out in the here that you can hear cars going by. So tell us about the acrid smell in Accra this morning.
Oh,
you guys smell the
permeating the area of Accra. We got a foul odor that seems to be comprised of a whole bunch of polymers burning. And from traveling up here, it looks to be a house fire over on what, Route 20?
Is that the smoke right there? That smoke flume?
Route 32.
Yep. Okay, looking south, we see the smoke plume coming from an area near Old Sarah's restaurant. And,
hopefully everybody's okay. You said it sounds like it's a pretty big house fire?
There was a lot of emergency vehicles. There were several fire trucks, several EMTs, the whole gamut. You got the sheriff and the local cops all over there.
You can't get past Route 23? You have to take a detour or something? Or
Route 23 is open, but if you're trying to get down the sideway, down Route 20 get to, say, Sunnyside Road, that's going to be blocked. So you're going to have to go and turn down by the Acre Manor instead.
All right, so there's the Catskill Makers traffic report debuting today.
Don't count on that being a regular thing.
Hey, you guys get general traffic conditions, but that's only when it's really bad. If it's, traffic is normal, I'm just not going to mention it. Just like if it's going to be a regular nice day, I'm not going to mention much. I'm going to say it's boring.
Here's the report today. People on the roundabout don't know when to yield.
Or they're yielding too long and sitting there playing with their phone.
Yeah.
Pay attention. Be courteous. Be kind.
Any other snow tips from the Catskill Makers today? Or you guys? I've got the flyers in my bag. You've got office hours on Thursdays now with your new flyers?
Okay, well, first some snow tips. Tonight it's going to snow bad. Make sure you get out there and clear out those fire hydrants. That's a big safety issue, especially if people are going to be hunkering down tonight using those space heaters. There's going to be some fire, so you're going to help out the fire companies big time that way. But, Thursday nights down at 65 West Bridge Street, we got the Catskill Maker Syndicate. We usually hang out 5 to 7-ish. Times are a little tentative day to day. And if anybody ever gives us a heads up, I mean, we can be contacted at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com. We'd be happy to make some time and hang out with anybody. Besides that, we're also there usually Saturday mornings.
But you're
Professor
here.
Von Mueller's bought here with me, too.
our official meeting on Thursdays is 5 to 8, but nobody comes in. I guess we might split. We can be found on social media, too. Contact us there.
If you're coming late, you should tell us you're coming.
Yeah,
We will wait for you.
All right, so any final thoughts? I guess we have to hit the gong to end things.
No, this is good. We're getting bored. Time to leave.
Sorry.
There There we go.
You can't hold our attention so long.
That was the Catskill Makers, everybody. Let's give them a big let's give them a big hand. Whoops, that's not a hand. Where is that?
Let's give them a clap.
Give yourself a pat on the back. Listen to that crowd.
Those okay, we're gonna get your better weather on now too, so we'll hear that now. I have it coming. Where is it?
It's around.
Oh, it's not on this page. Why won't my cursor move? I'm stuck. All right, you're listening to Radio WGXC Acre at 90.7 FM. We'll get some
sounds on here in a second.
Is a special weather report for Greene and Columbia County. The snow is on its way. It will begin around noon and become serious before 3 p.m. Snow can fall more than an inch an hour and will be light and easily blown around by the 20-mile-per-hour wind gusts that are expected around dusk. Please avoid travel at this time. Visibility can disappear in a moment's notice under those conditions. If you absolutely have to travel, give yourself plenty of extra time. Be sure to have emergency supplies like blankets, cell phone chargers, and extra food and water, just in case you get stuck and have to wait for help. This snow will keep falling till about midnight. Sunday morning, people will wake up to about a half a foot of snow. Roads should be maintained by then. However, watch for more blowing snow conditions through the day. Stay safe out there and enjoy the snow.
All right, can you feel the snow yet? In Acre, it is acrid with the house fire down the street here. Hope everyone is doing okay, because it doesn't smell like it. It smells like burning plastic in Acre today. So you may be
rotted around Route 20, we heard earlier, but and we can see the I don't see the smoke plume now, but I saw it before. But well, you can taste the air in Acre right now. It is acrid and yuck. Just about time for Radio Wonderland. Joshua Freed's going to be taking over things in moments. Remixing New York City Radio live on Hudson Valley frequencies. Stay tuned. Then the Itinerant Mind Show travels to Hong Kong and England at the same time at 11 a.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.